Welcome to part two of our interview and conversation about the emotions of the dead with Eileen Jones. Let me ask you this, and you were just talking about, you know, the emotions of happiness or sadness on a haunted location. What do you think is stronger? What do you think makes a bigger imprint that an investigator or someone who maybe lives there before an investigator even shows up, that they're having an experience, is more evident, happiness or sadness?
I've come across more, I think, the sadness as far as anything than I have happiness. So I think as an investigator, we come across that, and I hate speaking for everyone else, but I think we come across that more than anything, or just more confusion where people don't know they're dead. And which again causes the sadness. The only time I have like completely, you know, sat down and tried to open myself up, I was at the Old Southern Funeral Home in Kosciuszko. And a friend of mine, well, actually my best friend, her and her husband managed that location. But recently, last year, one of their founding members had passed away. And so we were kind of up there doing an investigation. It was my second time back since he had passed. And he had come across, or his name, or it said it was him, had come across the spirit box. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, I had my headphones on, and that's what no one understood until after I came out of everything. I had my headphones on, so I couldn't hear what was going on in a different room, and I was kind of out of it, per se. And I woke up, I just kind of came out of whatever I was in. My face was completely, like, wet, but I wasn't crying. But my eyes were, my face was like I was crying, but I had no reason to be sad. And, it's a funeral home, so when I opened myself up, I think all the emotions from just that area came to me, where they're like, well, maybe because Doyle came through. I was like, no, I really didn't even know Doyle came through, but it could have even been part of Doyle because he loved that location. Mm-hmm. But you know, it could have been something along those lines, but it was kind of freaked me out so much. I'm the type that I don't like to be alone. I will sit there and talk your ear off and be right there next to everyone. I had to walk away from the building and go sit by myself for a good 5 minutes or so just to kind of figure out what had just happened. But yeah, that in that location, you do get, I think everything has its, depending on the location. I mean, that particular one, I couldn't imagine anyone being happy in a funeral home. Or happy in a jail, or so I think a lot of it has to do with its locations. And I think as investigators, we tend to go to more locations that did not see the best of times.
And that's interesting, because when we're talking about a location that hasn't seen the best of times, it makes me wonder a little bit, how often are there paranormal experiences or haunting experiences going on that we're unaware of, because we're always trying to be so attuned to the sadness and the negative and that sort of thing. How often is it that empathic people are in fact in a location that is haunted, but the spirits don't happen to be in a bad mood or repressed or sad or angry? They're good. They're just like having a great time here, and you don't even know I'm here. You know, I mean, because it makes me wonder about that. I mean, you would think you would almost have both, but of course, one is what we, you know, almost instinctively consider haunted because it's spooky and it's kind of scary. But I wonder that sometimes when I'm in, especially when I'm in like weird older locations that one would think would be haunted, if I'm kind of suddenly feeling like in a really good mood, not just because I enjoy going to creepy old locations, but but maybe it is just that happens to be the aura of the place, and not everything is always going to be so negative. But sometimes we overlook that as being a possible valid answer to what's, you know, to what the aura of the location is.
Well, if you think about it, would you call someone in, like just say you're home, mm-hmm. if everything seemed like rainbows and butterflies no. with the haunting? Oh. Or would you call someone in if it's like always, you know, sadness or something, you know, doesn't feel right in a bad way? So, yeah, I mean, I can't think of one location out there that it would be like, oh yeah, well this happened and this person was so excited.
Exactly.
So when they passed, this is where they wanted to come to finish partying.
I know. I mean, it's an interesting concept. And I wonder if we'll hear more of that kind of in time, where it's not always so negative. It's more of happy hauntings and things of that nature. I don't know. It's not that appealing for like television or anything like that. Nobody's going to like, oh yeah, that's the place where everybody's having a good time. Like they want death and murder, but.
I was talking to Rebecca with Southern Paranormal the other day. We were at Coatsworth Plantation or something, and I was talking to her and I said, you know, sometimes I sit back and I kind of go, we're doing this for a reason. You're trying to figure out so many different answers, but we're doing it based on someone else's, you know, murder or horrible life. I said, sometimes it's kind of sad, mm-hmm. but at least we're trying to get them answers.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to validate why we do this.
Sure. Sure. It's just an interesting thing. And it kind of leads to another question. You know, we're talking about a funeral home just before. And again, this is just an opinion-based question. There's no right or wrong answer. It's a funeral home, obviously a location most of us don't spend a whole hell of a lot of time in, hopefully. It's a place that we think of as kind of spooky and kind of haunted. And they do have occurrences. We've heard hundreds of them over the years of encounters in funeral homes. But do you think that has more to do with the emotions of the living who are going through strife and the trauma of losing a loved one? And it's such a heavy, you know, just jam-packed with people, battery of people in sadness versus the dead person that they're all there to see. More so the living are causing the haunting or the activity by being such a hotbed of energy for other things, maybe from outside of the funeral home, to go, hey, I can kind of feed off of this, versus the dead people who are, you know, being shuffled through there.
Yeah, I think all the emotion does leave a mark on that location. And I do, now, with that being said, you do have people who devote their lives to this specific location. The caretaker at the Old Southern Funeral Home, mm-hmm. Like the story I heard, that he kind of was not all there towards the end of his life. Mm-hmm. And he kept trying to go back there to go to work because he loved that place.
Sure.
And so, like him, he could still be coming because that's where he considered home. The owners of it could consider that home. So I think they're part of who haunts it. Mm-hmm. But I do think majority of it is either the energy that's left behind. And I do think you might get a few spirits here and there that come through. I don't remember we've heard a little girl's voice in the funeral home. I don't remember what it said, but it said it, whatever it was twice. It was enough that you had about six of us all hear it at the same time and try to trace down exactly which direction it went to see if we could hear it again. Mm-hmm. This particular one does have, it has moved balls. So I think this particular one does have both, where it's the energy as well as the people, mm-hmm. but I think 90% of it is energy.
Yeah. Initially, you said when you were getting into investigating the paranormal, there was kind of that desire there in the back of your mind to maybe find some way to communicate with your mother who had passed. Over all of these years, have you ever had an opportunity to attempt to do that?
Well, that's kind of like a kind of a weird subject. My mother's best friend, who we called Mama Jo, lived across the street. And years later, we had left the house after my mother passed. But when Mama Jo told us that she had seen my mother standing in the doorway, and she had seen my mother like looking in the refrigerator. Of course, the refrigerator door was closed, but like, look, she was looking in the refrigerator. Mm-hmm. And that the homeowners finally came to her and told her that like the smallest bedroom light would come on about 4:30 in the morning. Then the guest bathroom, hallway bathroom light would come on, and then the kitchen. And it was like a pattern. Mm-hmm. And what they did not know is my mother's alarm clock always went off at 4:30 in the morning, which I was living with her at the time, me and my oldest boy. And her time of death was 4:30 in the morning. And most parents have the master bedroom. Mm-hmm. She had given me the master bedroom and my son the next largest room, and she had the smallest room in the house. So that's stuff that most people would not have just picked up on.
Sure.
And so they were talking about how it, you know, how she would do that pattern. And that was my mother's pattern. Well, Mama Jo told the lady that, okay, well, you know, her grandkids are grown. She's got this many grandkids. Two of them are Marines. Her kids are doing great. Well, the lady told my mother that. And this was all kind of before I got into investigating and or really investigating. And she said all the activity stopped. She says she still feels her presence, but the activity has actually stopped. So I did reach out to them. I found them on Facebook or reached out to them, and they don't want me to come in and do an investigation because of the fact they don't want the activity to start back up.
Okay.
But it was some, you know, it was kind of weird to have someone that, I mean, someone that honestly did not believe in spirits.
Sure.
Tell me that they saw my mother.
How did that make you feel when you got that statement said to you?
Until I started investigating, it kind of bothered me because I kind of was like, oh, well, why is she not passed on? Why is this? Why is that? But the more I started investigating, the more questions I had about life and death. And I'm like, okay, it's okay. It just happens. I don't know the answers to what happens after life. I have got this visual in my head of wings and angels and all this because mm-hmm. that's what makes the Philly good. But I'm like, okay, well, and if she really wants to come see us, which honestly, you know, being her children, I think she does sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I think she knows if she made her presence known, we could move on with our lives.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Eileen Jones about the emotions of the dead. Big thank you to her for joining us on the program and sharing her experiences with us today. And a thank you to you for supporting our program and helping to keep us on the air. We would not exist without it. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something. But this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery. But we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.